On Point, hosted by Peter Van Aartrijk. Conversations with interesting and informative experts on technology, branding, culture, social media marketing, and other great topics.
Hello again, everybody. I'm Peter Van Aartrijk, your host for On Point, a podcast brought to you by our good friends at Insurance Journal. And today is part two of a new book available in bookstores and on Amazon in 2018 called The Powers, 10 Factors for Building an Exponentially More Powerful Brand. And with me is Tony Westling, my co-author for this book. Welcome back, Tony.
Thank you, Peter. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, and for those listeners who want to catch the first piece, the podcast is already available. This is part two, and we're going to launch right in. Tony, power of five. Again, we're counting down from 10 to 1. The power of five, let's talk about that. It's the human side of make your brand a human brand, sorry.
Sure. So, yeah, we covered the powers 10 through 6 in the first episode. And so now we're going to go from 5 to 1. And the power of 5 is based on a very interesting thing, and that is that the human being, the number, the number that is associated with humanity is 5. If you look, we have 5 fingers on our hand. If you stand up and put your arms and legs out, you form a 5-point star. This is Da Vinci's Vitruvian Man. You've all seen it, you know, with the curly-haired guy in the circle with, you know, putting his arms and legs out. And we have 5 senses. Some would argue 6, but the fact of the matter is that physically speaking, we have 5 senses. And so brands that can appeal to the 5 senses of a human organism are going to be far more successful brands.
Well, and, you know, it's interesting, Tony, is how in the insurance industry, I don't think it's on purpose. I think it might just be a cultural thing or what's happened over time when you have the legal department protecting, quote unquote, protecting the company. But it seems like there's like a dearth of humanity. We were just on a website this morning, you and I, and we looked at it and said, gosh, it talks about people first, but there's no people on it. And I think there's this feeling that insurance is sort of distant, faceless, impersonal. And I don't know where that started, but I think the smarter insurance brands are showing their people in every way possible, their employees, of course, their leadership, but also their customers and their business partners. They're showing them, literally showing them on their websites and in all of their brand and culture expressions. I think people always say to me, you know, insurance is a people business. Well, I think it's time to show some of that humanity.
Yeah, and there's a real question there of just how much effort insurance companies actually expend to leverage the power of five. If you recall, you know, Lloyd's of London started in a coffee shop, and what better place to engage all 5 senses? You smell the coffee brewing. Back then, people were probably smoking tobacco pipes, and there were, you know, the rustling of papers, the arguments back and forth, the negotiations. I'm sure they served food, and they shook hands. It was all very much a human operation there. The power of five was totally enforced. But today, when's the last time you actually got a call from your broker out of the blue? When's the last time you received something from your insurance agent? When's the last time you had any kind of human experience with an insurance company? I think I mentioned in the last podcast I had actually a pretty good phone experience with Safeco. After somebody smashed into our car, they settled a claim for us. And there was something to be said there, but it really, in the end, it was just me talking on the phone to somebody else, as nice as they were. And actually, no, there was actually another piece of the power of five there. I did receive a check a few weeks later. And so there was something tangible about that. So they hit they hit 2 powers, and that's about it, though. I think the brands, especially insurance brands, need to work ways into finding ways to appeal to all 5 senses of the human race.
Yeah. And if you think about, they say like champagne, you open a bottle of champagne, it evokes all those five senses. The sound of the cork, the fizz of the bubbles, obviously the look of it, the bright crispness of the wine, the taste, the smell, all these things, are make champagne sort of instantly, kind of a human brand in every way. But I think insurance organizations can take a page from champagne. I we talked about showing people, but what about, what are your offices like to work in? Is there the smell of, maybe the smell of coffee or a latte machine in the lobby, fresh flowers? Brands are smart about jingles. They have a certain sound for radio or for the web when you're clicking on their website. They think these things through because people don't make decisions about buying and referring that on a rational basis. They make it in irrational, emotional, human side of it. And so I think we have a responsibility to evoke those five senses.
I would agree. And it may be a challenge for insurance companies, but I think that especially in the agent and broker side of things, the more they can engage the five senses of the people who comprise their book of business, the more successful they're going to be.
Let's talk next, Tony, about the power of four. This is actually my favorite chapter of the book, my favorite power. I think it probably comes from when over the years I've heard so many organizations say, we bought a new logo, or we have a new ad campaign, or we have a new website, and it's looking for the next silver bullet. The best brands you and I have seen, and the best cultures, which is that internal brand, if you will, the culture, the health of the organization on the people side, begin inside, not with outside ad agencies coming up with creative campaigns. It starts on the inside. Let's talk about branding within your own four walls, as it were.
Yes, the power of four is branding starts within your own four walls. As you said, very often people think of branding as a logo. Branding is not a logo. A logo is part of branding. It's part of a brand, but it's not. And in fact, all of the creative expressions that you see outside, what we comprise essentially the marketing of a company, all of those creative expressions, the messaging, the taglines, the websites, those are external expressions. Equally as important is the internal expression of the brand or the culture. As we often say here at Chromium, brand and culture are the same damn thing. There's just the one is expressed on the outside and the other is expressed on the inside. And so when people who are the leadership of a company pay as much attention to the culture as they do to the brand they're projecting to the marketplace, they have a much stronger, much more authentic brand that customers really will. They'll really be attracted to. And the reason why that is because when you work on leadership and make sure that leadership knows how to live the brand and knows how to express the brand internally, to communicate the brand, when you help the workforce understand, become clear on what the brand strategy is and why it is the way it is, and work on getting the workforce to be aligned behind the brand, then every single customer touch point will be that much better because the people inside will be working for the people outside, as opposed to, if marketing just makes up a brand and it doesn't equate with the actual inner workings of the company, then what's going to happen is you're going to have an experience like so many people have with their cable companies where you see all the expressions of the brand on the outside, and then when you actually have to interact with that brand, suddenly the customer service falls short, or it seems like all the products are made to their benefit, not to yours. Or you hear the leadership saying something very tone deaf, to the media. These things work against a brand, and so if you have a very strong brand but a very weak culture, the customer is going to have a very disappointing experience And if you have a weak culture, you're going to have a lot of turnover. It costs you a lot of money, and it costs you a lot in terms of customer loyalty as well, because customers and employees do not want to work, either work for or be associated with a toxic or weak culture. People like to be associated with things that are strong and positive, whether they're working for that brand or whether they are associating with that brand as customers.
The other key piece of this is that, pardon me, a lot of organizations have it set up where brand is kind of quote-unquote owned by marketing or communications, and culture is owned in the HR department. And the best brands you and I have seen, Tony, and we talk about in the book, are where the very top leadership, and you see this when companies behave badly, like the Uber CEO behaving badly. Well, how is the culture going to follow that? I would love it if CEOs would really own this whole concept of a brand and culture strategy and push for it, because there's probably nothing more important that a CEO could do. I mean, how many times have people been on the receiving end of a CEO email that says, oh, we're going to look at quarterly results today, or we're going to talk about net new growth, or we're going to talk about our new product line or our new commission schedule for our agents, brokers, whatever it is? What if it was an agenda item that just said our values, and we're going to talk, you know, about our values, our core values. We have six of them. They're hanging up in the office somewhere. Maybe you've seen them. We did those a decade ago. Are they still relevant? That's all we're going to talk about in this call. People are like, oh, core value, like we said 10 years ago that we're going to try to be more innovative, innovate in your job. Well, what have we done to see that one through? Which new ones should we have here in terms of core values? Which ones aren't relevant to us anymore? These are really important conversations that get lost often in HR conversations about the latest changes to the 401k plan.
That's right, and they also get lost when the marketing department has a certain promotion that they think is really going to work, and it actually goes against the core values, or it doesn't resonate with the deep human needs of the target audience. And so I think that you're right, that the key here is that brand and culture need to be formulated and fomented from the leadership team, from the C-suite and those senior VPs, and it has to be lived that way too. So core values, they not only are something that you hang up on the wall, as you said, they're also the operating principles. They're how you make decisions. They're how you make product decisions. They're how you make hiring and firing decisions. They're how you make communications decisions. So if everybody, whether that's HR or marketing, is paying attention to what the leadership is saying about our core values and how we need to operate according to our core values, you get a far more consistent, far more effective, and far more authentic experience for both, once again, for both the customers and the talent that you have there within the workforce.
Tony, the power of three is about your brand's positioning and also triangulation around with your customers and your competition. Let's talk about that one next.
Sure. Well, positioning is nothing new, but what's interesting about positioning is that in the years since it was first sort of identified by Al Rees and his co-author Trout, is that once your brand holds a position in the mind of the customer, it's really hard for it to be dislodged. It's kind of like taking a strategic hill. And sure, you stand out, right? You've planted your flag, but everybody can see that flag. Everybody knows you're there. And that positioning is so important. You know, when I say Volvo, what do you think of? What comes to mind?
Safety.
Right. When I say Quaker Oats, what comes to mind?
That one's a little bit lost on me, but I remember, I just have a lot of memories of that on the kitchen table when I was a kid with the guy dressed like a Quaker and sort of wholesome family breakfast. Maybe that's it.
Wholesome. That was the word I was looking for. So you got to it. So that whole idea of wholesome, right? So it's amazing. These brands hold this position, whether or not that's actually true. Is a Subaru any less safe than a Volvo? Hard to tell, but the fact of the matter is people think of Volvo as being safe. They think of Subaru as being sort of little and sporty and outdoorsy, even though they keep on talking about safety. They can't. It's really hard to dislodge the position holder from their perch. And so making sure that you build a strong position, whether that is some sort of niche. Suppose you're a provider of risk management solutions for high net worth individuals, or suppose that you are the most responsive. What is that positioning? What can you claim? And it's got to be authentic, but what can you claim that's going to be a unique place in the mind of the customers you serve? So again, Volvo, they're a global company, so they need to own a big word like safety. But within your market, what are you known for? What's your positioning? Or are you undifferentiated, right? So I'm a broker and I do all this different stuff. Or we're a carrier and we have a program for everyone. There's no differentiation there in terms of product or service offering. So maybe it's something different. Maybe it's we're the friendliest broker. Or maybe it's we're the most versatile carrier. You know, it really depends, or we're the oldest. Some sort of positioning that makes it so that it's easy for people to remember who you are and what you stand for.
You hit on it, Tony, when you said that there's a sort of a generalist feel. I know I've spoken with a lot of agents over the years who have said, we're a generalist. We need to serve the community or the county or the state or whatever. We sell all kinds of products. And companies that I believe are kind of stuck in status quo mode also talk that way. Well, we're a full service. We're a generalist. We have small commercial, mid-commercial, personal lines. You know, I don't think being a generalist is going to work in the future. Even if you are a generalist, you've got to find a way to position yourself where you're sort of even if you are you offer numerous products, how can you make them look like you're an expert at them? Maybe you're an expert in not just personal lines, but upscale personal lines. In commercial lines, maybe you have six niches that you hit really, really hard and can write more efficiently and more of it because you're good at it and your staff's good at it. I mean, you can't – people don't want a generalist. They want someone who understands them, even if it's – even if you just got to, over time, build that capability.
Sure. And an easy way to do this for anybody is there's a simple formula for putting together a basic positioning statement. It's not a full positioning statement with backed up by messaging pillars and everything. But if you can imagine that anybody who owns a business or anybody who's in marketing for a business can do this simple thing. It's a simple statement. It is for, name your target audience, who, state their need or the opportunity there. My company is a, what is your company? A broker, an agent, a carrier. That, and then you state the key benefit or the reason to buy. And then you say, unlike who is your primary competitor, it doesn't have to be a name, it could be a category. Our company provides, and then you make a statement of primary differentiation. So a good example is for business owners ages 30 to 35 who are in need of disability insurance, ABC Insurance is a disability insurance specialist that, you know, provides a wide range of solutions to these business owners. Unlike regular old brokers who offer everything, ABC Insurance is the disability benefits specialist, and we will help your young business succeed. Boom. It's that simple. You've just laid the stake in the ground. You have differentiated yourself. You've put the flag up. You've taken the hill.
And that's the power of three. Which, in a nutshell, is standing out by standing for something. Whatever that is, you've got to find out what it is you're going to stand for and differentiate. Now, the power of two, Tony, takes two to tango, is an investigation of how smart brands are very good at sort of dancing with their customers and prospects, in the sense that they know how to build a relationship. They know it's not about who can shout the loudest. It's about listening. Let's talk about the power of two a little bit.
The power of two, as anybody who's in a long-term relationship that's, you know, either successful or unsuccessful, knows that listening and communicating properly and communicating often is key to success. And there are so many tools available today, social media, or SoMe, as we call it, because everything about social media is so about me. Well, these tools, when they're used correctly, and I mean correctly, not just turn on the fire hose, but rather when social media tools are used correctly, they are incredibly powerful. Everybody is so busy. There are so many channels out there. But at the same time, these multiple channels make it so that you can, as somebody who's in charge of communicating or listening to customers and prospects, can tailor the message. You don't have to worry about broadcasting anymore. You're narrowcasting, and you're also able to get instant feedback. And these two things, that ability to send a very targeted message and then to immediately get feedback, they are the secret to the power of two. Communicating directly, communicating effectively, and listening to continually hone what it is that your customers are asking of you, what it is that you think you can, what solutions you can provide them. And as Steve Jobs famously said, you know, it's not the customer's job to know what they want. So we're not saying have your customers run your business for you or have your customers develop your products for you. They can't. They don't think about insurance. They don't think about this stuff all day. Risk management is a really abstract concept to them. What they're looking for you to do is to synthesize their challenges into solutions, and that requires the power of two, listening and communicating.
Tony, one of the tools to help develop these relationships is to really know the customer, like really understand, of course, the prospect as well, but who is going to be the customer? And there's a concept which we did not invent, but it's very clever. It's called customer avatar. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, the customer avatar is an idea that the more you have an actual visual cue of what it is who it is you're trying to talk to, you can communicate more effectively. So if you were to say, who are sort of the three top archetypes of our customers? There's Tommy Troublemaker, there's Johnny Homemaker, and there's Susie the Executive. So once you can sort of name those people, as it were, and you can say, who is Tommy Troublemaker? Well, he's between 18 and 24. He's out of high school, but he didn't go to college. So he's kind of, you know, drifting around. He likes to wear flashy clothes, drive a fast car that makes a lot of noise, and he drinks beer and he drinks tequila and he eats at these restaurants and so you really describe him down to the T, right? And then you can actually go into magazines and tear out pictures and say he looks like this. And so once you have that clear picture of your customer, this avatar, it's so much easier to say, what would Tommy think of this, right? What would Susie think of this? And so once you are able to visualize who that customer is through the customer avatar, then you can employ the power of two far more effectively. You can listen to them, understand their troubles, anticipate their troubles, and then provide them solutions that you know will be appropriate.
Yeah, I know that Foremost Insurance up in Grand Rapids, Michigan, has an ongoing project with a local independent agency, and they're still in test mode. But one of the goals of this customer experience campaign is to improve the renewal, improve retentions. In other words, make sure that people renew and even buy more coverage from the agency. So they're looking at the whole that whole experience. But along the way, they created customer avatars. These are personal and small commercial lines customers of the of this agency, and they got it so detailed, Tony. I think they developed six for each, six, which is a little, maybe it's a couple too many for personal lines, but maybe in commercial lines you could have more. But they have it so that they not only, as you said, name them, they have kind of like a sketch of who these people are, and they have them hanging up on the wall in the CSR's offices with the, you know, here's Betty, and this is the things that she cares about. Here's Jim, you know, he belongs to Kiwanis or whatever. And they've got it down now where people call in and they just know that this customer or prospect fits into one of these six, with some exceptions, avatars. So this really works, and it helps understand, because the whole purpose of it is not to have make fun of people. It's to really understand what drives them, what drives their buy behavior, what kind of relationship are they looking for. It's so helpful to really get around the table and sit in the seat of your customers. And what do they care about? They don't care about lingo or jargon like CGL and HO. They care about things important to them. What are those things? And that's what an avatar will help create for you.
I would agree.
Okay. Moving on here to the power of one, Tony. This is the chapter in which there's a fair amount of detail about how to create a unique brand and culture strategy. What are the process to go through? It's not a matter of choosing the color red for your logo. There's a lot of things that have to happen. And that process in and of itself, because we've been through quite a bit with our clients, is so energizing. It's not easy necessarily, but when done well with a structure, it's actually quite a bit of fun and eliminates a lot of, I don't want to say bad behavior, but sort of inefficient conversation throughout the weeks and years and even quarters, quarterly results kind of time goes by where decisions aren't being made, things are being delayed because there's just a lack of a clear strategy around where we're going as a firm. And so the power of one outlines quite a bit of detail on how to build a singular, powerful, clear brand and culture strategy.
Yeah, the basic our brand strategy, the way that we put it together, has nine core components: mission, vision, values, the brand essence at the center, then the targets, deep human needs, the persona that you project, the positioning, the brand evidence, or the things that make your brand powerful, and then the narrative. And those nine components, when done well, project a single, clear brand image. When people think of a strong brand, they think of it as a single thing. When I say to you Starbucks, you don't think of all sorts of different things. Your mind immediately thinks of a concept. It's an experience. It's a memory. It's a single thing within your mind. Sure, you can then break it down and say, well, here's their logo, here's the color green, here's the coffee, here's the seats. Whatever it is, you can break it down. But when you first think of any brand, it comes to you as a single concept. And yet behind it is all this stuff going on, not just our nine components, but there's all this work that goes into making that singular brand appear in the customer's mind. It's very complex behind the scenes, but it should appear as a single concept, a single image, a single memory in the mind of the customer.
And among those nine things, Tony, the two areas that are my, they're all important, obviously, but the two that are my favorites are vision and core values. Vision being the right, you know, articulating the better world or the better state of affairs you're trying to create for customers and prospects. It's about the why you go to work every day. And this is really hard for a lot of companies to focus on because they're always thinking about the what. Well, we sell insurance and we pay claims. But what are you really doing? Is it good that you pay claims? Isn't it better that you have conversations with customers so that they can avoid having these horrible things happen to them? Isn't that a better state of affairs? And yes, the insurance is there for them, but there's a lot that can go on to make the world a better place if you have that why right. And then on core values, describing the behavior that we're asking each other as associates, as employees to behave, how we behave at work, what's acceptable and not acceptable, and is it okay to raise your hand in a meeting and challenge the status quo? These things need to be articulated, Tony, and written down, because otherwise you have these big, thick employee manuals describing when to come in, when to leave, what to wear, and they don't work. They don't work to drive innovation in a company.
Yeah, that's true. And you know, you mentioned, sure, providing insurance is not, that it's not the policy, is not the vision, right? You could really say, and this is there's always a big confusion between mission and vision. And the mission is what you do. We provide insurance. We reduce, the risk in people's lives. The vision is, like you said, it's that better world that you're helping to bring about, so that, and so you could say at ABC Insurance, we're working to build a world where the collective care, the collective financial care of our policyholders protects, makes it so the individual does not have to worry about their own personal existence. It's a bigger picture. It's a better state of affairs, as you say. There is a current state of affairs, and there could be a better one. And so a company should always be working towards that better state of affairs. And that way, when you're working towards something which is the why you do things, it's so much better. It's just better for the customers. It's better for the workforce. It's better for everyone.
Well, thank you, Tony. Book again is called The Powers. Where can people find more information about the book?
Well, you can find more information on our website, www.chromium.group, or you can go to thepowersbook.com. We are also looking to keep the conversation going with the Twitter hashtag the powers, or you can go to Amazon or Barnes and Noble or your favorite local bookseller, and hopefully they will have it.
Okay, is it the powers, hashtag the powers book, or hashtag the powers, or both?
Hashtag the powers.
Oh, excellent. Okay. All right. Well, Tony, thanks for wrapping up this two-parter on the Powers book, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Peter.